Eric Zorin joins us now, a mincing rascal. He's part of the podcast team. We drop every Wednesday a new edition of the Mincing Rascals. Eric, a longtime columnist for the Chicago Tribune, he now publishes something called the Picayune Sentinel, a free weekly newsletter you can pay but a pittance for it to get the premium edition. Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm good, John. Thanks. What's the controversy about the Lido shuffle? Are people complaining about Kamala Harris being shuffled in?
Oh, no, although that would be the double entendre of it all. No, my understanding is that tonight they're going to play songs that represent the various states. I'm imagining a scenario where they're like walk-up songs for the states when they announce their presence, and we were wondering what our song should be. Is it My Kind of Town or Sweet Home Chicago? And I'm just fielding all sorts of suggestions here.
Lots of snark, I'm sure.
No, actually, it's more celebratory than you might imagine. I'm sure the snarkers are out there. In fact, I do hear from them every now and then, but I think mostly Chicago is comporting itself pretty well, and people are happy to see nice weather and a bright light shining on our city. Now, it's only, what is the time here, 11:37 on Tuesday. We need to get, the finish line is Thursday midnight, if you will. But so far, so good for the Democratic National Convention.
I would agree with that. Yesterday was a beautiful day, and I was following the news very carefully because I was concerned about these reports that we're going to have 25,000 people in Union Park with only 7 porta potties, and they were going to march close to the United Center. And with you've got 25,000 people who have been denied, most of them denied a bathroom, you were going to see a lot of people in really sour moods and that things could really go sideways. And really, almost completely, things went fine. I mean, there was that little incident where some of the agitators tried to, or they did break through one of the
right
security fences. But, you know, for the most part, it was, and the other thing, of course, was that the turnout at that protest was much smaller than anybody had anticipated. It was funny, the newspapers were saying things like probably thousands of people or thousands, but nowhere near the tens of thousands that the organizers had predicted. And in fact, NBC News last night in their newscast had a graphic that said tens of thousands protest at the DNC. It looks like something that an intern put together over the weekend before anybody knew what was going on, because it was clearly there were not tens of thousands of protesters there. And I think that, you know, the size of the crowd seemed very peaceful, and, you know, God bless them for expressing their views in a civil fashion. So if that continues through the rest of the week, it's going to be a really good statement for Chicago at a really successful convention. But again, as you point out, it's really early.
Yeah, I got my fingers crossed, and we'll just see. We haven't seen buses from Texas arrive with more migrants than normal. I just imagine a scene where they were going to be spilling out someplace and trying to create a sort of mayhem. And so far, that has not happened. But again, Tuesday at now 11:39 and then 11:40. We're counting down the days and minutes to both the highlights, and hopefully we'll be able to dodge the lowlights. I did see some video from Hadam Abadea, who is one of the lead organizers of this pro-Palestinian march and rally. And it's where a Jewish person is coming up to him and sort of conversing with him. And Abadea says, well, what are you doing here? And the person said, well, I just want the media and people to know that yours isn't the only voice here, that some of us feel differently. And then Abadea sort of got in an exchange with this guy, and everybody's got their phones out. It's one of those scenes that can blow up, but also get more coverage than maybe is truly representative of what's going on. And Abadea had some harsh words for this guy. It kind of reminds me of Neil Steinberg, our friend from the Sun-Times, who went over to Union Park to talk to protesters. I don't know what is ever accomplished by those sorts of encounters. If I didn't agree with these protesters, I don't know that I would go over there to engage in them, that nothing good comes from that sort of quote unquote conversation, you know?
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I think under those circumstances and those kinds of venues, it just comes off as harassment or just picking a fight, being a troll and yeah. So on, to go to a place like that and start challenging them, let them speak. And you can deal with deal with the issues maybe in different kinds of forums. I mean, clearly there are different points of view on this, on Palestine, Israel, Gaza, and so on. And like I wrote today, I don't pretend to be an expert in that region, and I have some mixed feelings about that. I am very concerned about chants like, you know, Palestine will be free from the river to the sea, because it sort of suggests to me a desire that for Israel not to exist anymore. And it sort of glamorizes and romanticizes what Hamas did and what Hamas has done by, you know, keeping their tunnels and their headquarters right by hospitals and schools. I mean, it's a very complicated and awful situation. I wish that these protesters would be protesting for peace, for a ceasefire, and not, you know, for the elimination of Israel. But, you know, that they don't take their marching orders from me, clearly.
So. I'm not seeing anti-Hamas signs, but I suppose that would maybe underscore the point, because both when we talk about it on this radio show, and when we talk to people that represent both sides on this radio show, they both say we want the killing to stop. They both say we want the killing to stop. And to be pro-Palestinian, that is to find a way for those people to live sovereign in Gaza or the West Bank or somewhere, is not to say that you are pro-Hamas, but those things get conflated.
Well, they really do. And so, and in fact, some of the chants seem like they are very friendly to Hamas and very hostile to Israel. And again, you know, I'm not there. There was a thing in one of the news counts where one of the activists said that, quote, Palestinian liberation is reproductive justice. This is the pro-choice people were rallying with the pro-Palestinian people. And the idea that Palestinian liberation is reproductive justice is just, it's like the Queers for Palestine thing. It's like they don't quite understand what, you know, life would be like in Palestine for someone who is queer or for someone who wants an abortion. I mean, it's the idea that they're sort of glamorizing and romanticizing the Palestinian effort. Like, oh, these people are all, you know, progressives like we are, and they believe in the same human rights that we do. Well, not exactly. And so does that kind of naivete, that kind of oversimplifying. I wrote today about all the demands that the protesters are circulating. I don't know if you saw the list, but they say things like, immigrant rights and legalization for all is one of their demands, which is, you know, sounds a lot to people like open borders, which is really not a popular position, not politically popular. You're not going to get the Democrats behind legalization for all undocumented immigrants at this point. They say one of their demands is justice, peace, and equality for all. And I'm not even sure what that means, but it's certainly aspirational. I think we all agree in justice and peace for all. And what we mean by equality, I don't know exactly. I mean, whether we mean equality of opportunity or equality of outcome, I'm not sure what all that is supposed to mean. But these sort of vague demands that they're making and unrealistic demands, they're saying things like, you know, we want money for jobs, schools, healthcare, housing, and the environment, but not for war. And that to me suggests like abandoning Ukraine, which is something that I don't agree that we should do. So it's a strange grab bag of causes that you're seeing. And again, I think people should have the right to speak, but I'm not sure of the proper venue for challenging them or debating them on certain points.
I want somebody to just pull some of these people aside and say, who are you? Where do you live? What do you do for a job? What does your family say about this? You are here to disrupt, and maybe that's to be applauded. That is, I don't want to get in my car and drive downtown and carry a sign. So at least you have your convictions, and you're acting on them. I shouldn't criticize that, but I just wonder who these people are, especially when their demands are either so unrealistic or vague. It seems more that they just want to create a commotion rather than they want to move the ball forward. Who are these people?
I believe some of them are very sincere, very aspirational people who see problems in the world and they want them solved now or sooner. There was an op-ed by Andy Thayer who in the Tribune the other day, and Andy Thayer is one of these activists who shows up at just about every cause and has for years. He's a very familiar face to those of you who have watched news coverage of protests. And he was talking about the virtues of maths, youth disaffection from traditional institutions, and basically saying that you have to, that moderates who insist on staying the course for incremental reform are only fueling the right wing. But I think that moderates who've come out and vote for the more moderate candidate in a case like the upcoming election, I think they're the ones who are preserving the chance for social change down the line. I mean, he was sort of suggesting that all the civil rights movement and all the, you know, the anti-war movement and the pro-gay rights movement is all the credited to people who were disruptive and who didn't go along with the two-party system. I don't think that's true. I think a lot of that change came from within the parties. And that when you get behind a candidate in your party and you belong to that party, not necessarily literally, but if you are identifying with that party and boosting that party, you have a chance of changing that party's direction. I don't think it was protests that, say, persuaded Joe Biden and Barack Obama to move on gay marriage. I think it was the overall shift of our public consciousness about that issue. It wasn't because people were out in the streets blocking traffic.
Otherwise, though, it does seem so lackadaisical, doesn't it? What are you going to do? Peacefully march or call in talk shows or write blogs? I mean, how do you get attention? And how? I hear what you're saying, but I understand the almost sense of urgency for the other side, particularly if the thing is something that is so important to you. Maybe it's abortion. Maybe it's voting access. Maybe it's Palestine and Gaza, whatever it is. But I mean, I can understand why some people don't feel like civil disobedience is sufficient. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
I'm not advocating for that. I'm not advocating for that. But I also understand why some of these people are less patient than you're making it sound.
No, I don't think you need to be patient. I think they should be out protesting, making their point. But I think at the end of the day, they need to realize that for the causes that they are talking about here, the Democratic Party is the party that represents them far, far better than the Republican Party. And Andy Thayer, in his op-ed, refers to a Trump revenge presidency, which I thought was a pretty good formulation as to what we could look forward to if Donald Trump is elected president again, that he really wants to take revenge on all the people he thinks have wronged him, and it could be really ugly. The realization at the end of the day is that either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump is going to be elected president of the United States in November. It's not going to be Cornel West. It's not going to be RFK Jr. It's not going to be Marianne Williamson, whoever else is out there running.
Okay.
It's going to be one of those two, and you need to make that choice, and you need to get behind that choice at least a little bit. You can't say, well, we're not going to vote for you if you don't, suspend arms sales to Israel or something like that.
Okay, this sounds like Neil Steinberg's column in the Sun Times, and I had a conversation with a young person about this sort of tactic, and they just kind of shrugged. That is, if you are so critical of the Democrats in Chicago right now that you persuade people not to vote for them because of the way they're handling, say, what's happening in Israel and Gaza, if you're so critical of them that you persuade some people not to vote for them, Donald Trump and the Republicans aren't going to be any friendlier to your cause. So what are you doing here? But the response I got from this young person is maybe we can move the Democrats. That is, maybe we can actually persuade them to see our side a little bit better. They need to hear that we're angry, that we're critical of them. We're not saying we want Donald Trump to be president. We're saying we're unhappy with how you're doing. What do you want us to do? Sit on our hands? That was the response I got.
I think that's really valid, and I think that's maybe what they're doing out there. They're trying. I mean, if you're out there marching, saying this is what you want, but the big puppets with Kamala Harris with fangs on her, calling her Killer Kamala, that is going to erode her support among certain populations of voters.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what I think the purpose of making that strong statement is a really, really urgent thing for people to do. I think it's really important. I totally support it. But at the end of the day, yes, you need to tell the party that it's not doing what you want it to do. But to say you're not going to vote for them, you're going to say, well, it doesn't matter. It matters. It's going to matter to Palestine, for instance, if Donald Trump is president. Because as people say, he's going to take over. He'll let Israel take over the Gaza Strip. He'll build hotels and resorts on the Gaza Strip. He is not a friend of the Palestinians, and the Democrats are trying to work out a peace. Now, I'm not defending everything they did by any means, but I'm saying that if you've got to choose, and you do have to choose because it's one or the other, That's when it comes down to it, at the end of the day. Now, we're not at the end of the day yet, and that's fine for them to be protesting, and I think their voices should be heard, and I'm glad they're out there. But you don't want to damage the cause too much, because, you know, it's not the worse the better is not true.
It's sort of a baby in bathwater case. It's 11:50. Okay, I'm out of time. We got to go. We'll finish this conversation and have more on the Mincing Rascals podcast. That'll drop tomorrow. Eric Zorn publishes the Picayune Sentinel. Email ericzorn@gmail.com. He'll set you up. Thank you, Eric.
Thanks, John.